Hi, I'm Candace Michelle, and welcome back to another segment of Our Community. Brookings Core Response Executive Director Diana Cooper joins me again, and what we're going to try and do is make some sense of the impact that the mess our city council has created is having around the state. Hi, Diana. Welcome back.
Hi.
I got that third booster on Saturday. So this is Tuesday. Yeah. And Diana and I usually record this on Saturday. But about an hour after I got that booster, I'm thinking, wow, my head feels like wet wool. No thoughts were actually forming.
Kind of were mentioning that you were struggling, I didn't put two and two together that you gotten the booster. And you had told me, but I didn't. And so I was like, all right, like, she's just going through some stuff. And then later on when I talked to you and you mentioned, I was like, oh yeah, you're off the hook. Yeah. All right. But yeah, it does feel like a weird day because it's not Saturday, but it should be Saturday.
I know. I was like writing the outline and I'm thinking, okay, this is Saturday. And what that means is that as soon as I'm done with this, I've got to start scheduling for tomorrow. Then it occurred to me that not only is this not Saturday, but KCIW is off the air.
No.
So it's like, not only is it not Saturday, but I don't have to do any scheduling for tomorrow.
What a weird void we're recording in.
Oh, it is such a weird void. It really is. Oh. And yet, you know, what I'm finding is that we are getting known, the city of Brookings and all of the nonsense that's going on is getting known all up and down the coast.
I mean,
people as far away as Portland are doing news reports on it. KFUG in Crescent City is doing something on it. I mean, it's like...
And Vice? Wow. I didn't know what Vice was. So I had to be... Bernie had to tell me what that was. So. Mm-hmm. That's national, though. You know, this is kind of getting out. So, yeah, we've all had various emails and voicemails in our inboxes kind of requesting comments or requesting information. So there's definitely a lot getting out and a lot of curiosity around this. I looked it up earlier, and there hasn't really been a lot of cases like this. And so that's probably why. It's kind of like...
Go figure.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, you're going to deny a church their First Amendment rights? Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And then people have had stuff to say about the KCIW being taken down too, which actually sometimes surprises me too, because everybody's so tuned in right now to what's going on in our community. Mm-hmm. So it's very strange, but also helpful because it kind of gives us some validation sometimes when, you know, there's other entities that are like, what's going on over there? Why is that happening that way? And so, you know.
People are paying attention who might not have been before.
Oh,
They are now paying attention because it's, you know, it's making the news. I mean, I think I was in Grocery Outlet the other day, and the couple behind me were talking to each other about St. Tim's and about what was going on.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Just talking.
That'd be so weird to be standing there.
And how you know they were supportive of St. Tim's, and I mean, she said, "Let's just feed them for heaven's sake." You know, it's like, duh, right? Let's just feed people.
I don't go out enough. I haven't heard it outside of, you know, our circles so much, other than, you know, it's definitely all over Facebook, people I don't know. So I guess I can't say that I haven't, but I haven't had any firsthand experiences like that. It would be kind of strange.
It was a little. Yeah. I didn't say anything. I just kind of listened.
Yeah, of course.
You know, I lurked and listened, because I just wanted to hear, you know. Yeah, it was it was an interesting moment. It really was. So, you know, at their last council meeting on Monday, October 25th, the city council had three issues in front of it. And not only did they get all three of them wrong, but have in the process managed to get, as I said, notoriety up and down the coast.
Sure.
Oregon Public Broadcasting, Portland's KGW, the community radio station in Crescent City, KFUG. I mean, it's like all mm-hmm. over the place. And you and I have discussed the St. Timothy's outreach issue at length. Not only is the entire American Episcopal Church watching these goings on, but the city council isn't making many friends locally either. People here, for whatever their differences of opinion politically, conservative or progressive, still care about the marginalized folks in our community and feel strongly that the churches should not be impeded in any way from at least making sure that people have one hot meal a day. It seems so little to ask from folks who profess to follow in the footsteps of Jesus Christ.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I mean, I've had conversations with some of the city council members, and you know, I know that some of them do follow the same God that I follow. And so to me, it's really hard. Like, how do I, as a Christian, how do I reconcile that I'm getting a different message than other Christians? And not, mm-hmm. not all other Christians, just a few, honestly. Mm-hmm. I think the majority of us feel, even those who speak out against these services, I think if it came down to it and you were sitting in front of them, you know, they would be willing to say that someone that they know or someone they care about or, you know, whatever the case may be, or maybe just some person that has fits all the criteria where they extend that empathy and compassion. I think that, you know, they understand that. But on a policy level, this is much, much different. And so as a Christian, I just have a hard time reconciling those differences in the message of God that other Christians are hearing. You know, and I frankly was really disappointed that, you know, that Ed voted the way he did. I actually thought for a second when it came around for a second, you know, there was a first motion to approve it. Mm-hmm. And when it came around for a second, it sat very silent for a while. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, enough to count. And so I thought maybe some of them are reconsidering mm-hmm. this, or maybe some of them are not all in on this. But when it came actually down to the vote, it was unanimous within moments of being called. So that, you know, that sucked. But I was, you know, not as much as with the other council members, but I was disappointed that Ed voted the way he did. Because it's just, this vote didn't need to happen like that.
Oh, not at all.
This ordinance didn't need to be, or this, you know, part of the municipal code didn't need to be written the way that it was. Yeah. I understand why it needed to be written, and I understand exactly what they were doing. I do understand mm-hmm. that. I understand mm-hmm. what they were trying to do, what they mm-hmm. hoped to accomplish. And I think there are two different things that there were that they wanted to accomplish with this. And one of those was legitimate, and that was putting that wording into the municipal code so that they, as a city, as a government entity, are not impeding the rights of the church.
So explain that to me, because I don't, mm-hmm. I'm not clear about that.
Well, so I do think that, you know, there may be some wording that needed to have been put into the Brookings Municipal Code to specify that, you know, commercial kitchens, which are labeled as a restaurant for OHA, but commercial kitchens within kitchens or within churches mm-hmm. would not be classified the same as a restaurant. And so they could have easily put that in there. And what that does, what that would have done, is effectively not given the churches the right to provide their ministry, because churches, the government's job is not to allow religion to be practiced. It's to get out of the way so that religion can be practiced. Exactly. And that doesn't mean, you know, obviously there's some limitation to that, I suppose, if it was harming people, you know. Obviously, we're not going to have sacrifices, but... I don't, this is way, way different than that. I mean, this is obviously one of the basic necessities of life, which is food. And I don't believe that any restrictions should have been placed or needed to be placed. It was not necessary. You know, it's necessary to maybe include the language so that there's no chance of the church's rights being restricted by the city. But they intentionally put restrictions in at the same time. Right. So
it seems like it's just backwards.
Right.
I don't understand. I know what they say, and what they're saying is that there was a hole in the municipal code.
Right, which there
that
was.
Actually made what the church was doing illegal.
Right. And I do believe that's true. Yeah.
But is it not true only if what you consider their kitchen as a restaurant? If you don't attach restaurant to the church's kitchen, then it's not illegal.
And maybe that's the mistake, is attaching that, because that it is classified. Right. It is classified that way through OHA apparently, but that's for public health reasons. That's
exactly.
Has
it's only for licensing, for the public health.
And everything I've read on this, and they must have read some. I mean, they must have looked some of this up, or
certainly
I would
their
hope.
Attorney should have looked some of this up.
Oh, for sure, yeah. But if they had looked it up, I mean, they probably would have seen similar things that I saw and that everybody else saw, which is that's really just codified for public health reasons. I mean, even within city government and county governments, it was purely for public health reasons. And so I have not found anything stating that churches are, you know, considered restaurants in any other residential area in any other city or county. And so
mention of it. I mean, because it's so not.
Mm-hmm. And so maybe if they were just really wanted to make sure they had their I's dotted and their T's crossed so that they weren't the ones holding the churches back, putting that language in there stating, hey, these commercial kitchens in churches are not restaurants. They're, you know, benevolent meal sites or whatever they want to call it. But they have the liberty to do that. And they have the ability to put that in a way that's not restricting. But at the very beginning of the meeting, well, at the beginning of that agenda item, because I think it started about half an hour in, at the very beginning, you know, Janelle did talk a lot about sort of the difference, restaurants and commercial kitchens and whatnot. And she talks about giving churches the ability, but then she immediately in the same sentence turns around and goes into the restrictions and says that restrictions. Mm-hmm. So it is about, it's two part, and one part's not necessary. One part's very discriminatory. It's very, well, that's the part we're fighting, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And the other part of this that is so clear to me is that this was an attempt to somehow answer that petition that came in to the city council back in April from the 29, you know, neighbors in that area. A couple of them were actually, you know, members of our police department, right? But it was the city council's answer, or their attempt to answer that petition. The problem is that it doesn't answer the petition at all.
Well, again, this is really two parts. This is one part putting it into the BMC and one part creating a conditional use permit to for restrictive purposes. Mm-hmm. And I think we really need to keep breaking it down that way. Because if the city wants to maintain that they're doing this to get out of the church's way, which is absolutely their prerogative as a government entity, then we have to separate out those two actions that they took as one. They took it as one, but it really is two. And so, yeah, I think one of these things tries to answer that. One of them is just putting it into the code. The other one's trying to answer that. That's the restrictions and the conditional use permit. And as I said in the meeting, both sides of this issue have said that that's not going to address it. And so,
Not at all. I mean, not at all. I mean, the other churches that they were talking about who could possibly do some of the feeding are in that neighborhood.
No, they're exactly. We can see, almost see both of them from the church. So,
so it's not like it's going to mitigate traffic in the neighborhood because it's
No, the restriction was completely unnecessary.
Exactly.
And I don't think anybody understands on anybody on outside of the city. I don't think we understand.
And the reality is that there have been Azalea Park has been the favorite hangout for years of people who are unsheltered, unhomed, just folks who want to hang out.
It, if you're doubled up, that's often a place to go, especially during sunny days, to kind of get out of people's hair.
Exactly. So it's not St. Tim's. It's been Azalea Park. So what are they going to do? Close the park? I mean, come
on. I don't know if anybody realizes this at the city. I'm sure they must at the city. But our parks and our churches are basically all, I think, but one in residential areas. That's just the way of it. That's by design. That's how
by design.
That's how they were made.
Exactly.
In fact, churches were typically, you know, one of the first things built, and then you sort of built around the church. And so, you know, I think the idea was that if you didn't have God, you couldn't have community. And of course, you know, now I'm, if you don't have any kind of higher power, I would say it's hard to have community. But for me, that's God. And for some of the people on that council, it is. And so, yeah, it's a frustrating part.
It's very, very frustrating. There were comments that were made at the end of the meeting by each councilman, each council person had a turn. And you know what stuck in my mind was how either the statements were either just not true or they only represented part of the actual situation. So I went back and, you know, and I listened a couple of times because I wanted to make sure that I actually had heard, my ears had heard correctly. And Councillor Alcorn was the first one to offer his comments. He said that people were not going to go hungry because the city of Brookings will have 8 days of coverage with the various churches in town. Right. And then he went on to say 8 days a week, right? So while there are indeed several churches who used to help feed the hungry, only two have remained active during the pandemic. And there's no guarantee that the others are going to step up. In fact, the only church continuing to feed 7 days a week has been St. Tim's.
Yeah, and I don't think that the this is my understanding coming from Bernie and just from hearing some of them speak. My understanding is that the other churches aren't intending on opening another day a week. There might be one more church coming online, which would make four churches. And maybe the Lutheran church already has come online. That's the one I was thinking of. But I'm not 100% sure of that yet. So right now, I think, sure, there could be. Oh, maybe that's why he was talking about 8 days a week, because the Lutherans probably already did come online. So that would
But he's assuming that each church is going to take 2 days.
Right, and they're not. And even if a couple of them did, there would still be some gaps. And so,
absolutely,
I don't think it's something where St. Timothy's is just hoarding all of the coverage. you know, I don't think we're like, no, we will serve this thing. I think Fridays, though, would be pretty hard to pry away from Robert's hands with the pizzas. So yeah, Friday yeah. might be the one day we'll haggle for. But yeah, so, I mean, yeah, essentially there could be 8 days a week coverage if there were 8 days in a week. But yeah, so there's
clearly there's not.
Yeah. Right. So there are 7 days a week coverage right now, and the majority of that does fall on St. Timothy's, and maybe that will change in the future. But as a church, we need to have that flexibility to be able exactly. to move like that. And even exactly. if the other churches came online and we were doing 1 day a week, we need to be able to have that ability to serve our people. Like, that's essential to what we do. And I thought that was essential to all churches, but I've slowly learned that that's not the case.
And, which is just kind of astounding to me.
Well, it's, I mean, growing up here and growing up in, well, I grew up in my early years, I was in the Nazarene. And, you know, later on when I started becoming a teenager, I started going to the Calvary Assembly here, actually just at the other end from St. Tim's on Fir. And so I've been to a few of the churches. I've also been to the Lighthouse Assembly. I went there. That's the one out in Harbor. I went there when I was younger for, I want to say it was like Girl Scouts, but I don't remember it being mm-hmm. called Girl Scouts. It was something right. else, I think. And so, you know, I've definitely met a lot of the pastors, Pastor Lance at the Fifth Street, the one on Fifth Street. Mm-hmm. He married Matt and I, mm-hmm. you know, 14 years ago, some odd
I
years
think
ago.
It was longer than that.
No, it was 14, 2007.
Was it 14?
Okay. Yeah, yeah. I'm not that old. Okay.
So, I keep losing track of time. I'm trying to blame COVID for that, but, you know, it could be that I'm just getting older.
It could be. It could yeah. be both. Yeah. So, yeah. So I, you know, again, and many of the pastors actually were, I don't know if this is common elsewhere, but many of the pastors here in town were bus drivers. And so I had three that I remember right off the top of my head as bus drivers, and wow. Including a youth pastor. And so, you know, it's a very small town, and mm-hmm. There's a lot of presence mm-hmm. With our churches, and mm-hmm. There could be so much bigger impact because they're everywhere, they're in everything. And so, I really think there could be a force for good. But
But the reality is that where mm-hmm. we are right now, we have mm-hmm. what we have, yeah. and we don't have any more than what we have.
And right.
Right
and
now,
we would
St.
love that
Tim's,
to change.
Yeah,
right.
of course. Of we course. Would. But right now, St. Tim's is the one that has been consistently offering
and
hot food
yes.
every day.
And if the city is going to stand and maintain, which I also think they're wrong in, if the city is going to stand and maintain that it is not their job to provide social services, then they need to take that step back, I suppose, when other agencies come in and say that
That's
we
right.
will.
Yeah.
You exactly. can't have it both ways. You can't yeah. say we're not involved and then get involved in a way that is restrictive. It's very That's clearly right. discriminatory. It's so obvious.
Yep. 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 Which is, you know, I mean, one of the reasons they're going to lose on this, because it right. is so clearly discrimination. So clearly. Mm-hmm. So Counselor Alcorn further states, at the conclusion of them, the neighbors presenting that petition back in April, they said something that really resonated with him. They said that they were living in fear. He said, there are people in our town that are living in fear.
Certainly.
But the only people Counselor Alcorn seems concerned about are the ones who are living in houses,
right?
Not the 100 or so families living in the brush, up the river, in their cars, or couch surfing at their friends. And he doesn't mention that the guy who pulled a gun on one of the unsheltered actually lives in a house.
Mm-hmm.
And the group of unsheltered folks were over at Azalea Park, not yeah. St. Tim's at the time. So who actually has legitimate reason for fear? The guy who can close and lock his doors, or the unarmed, homeless man who was hassled and had a gun pulled on him. Mm-hmm. The house neighbor was arrested, by the way.
Yeah. Yes, that was brought up. I actually, so I'm just going to make sure everybody's clear on this. I left the council meeting at right around that part, shortly after that part. It was very frustrating, and Michelle had already kind of spoken up in the middle, and you know, she wasn't
shut down.
Right. She wasn't gaveled, so you know, there's that.
But close.
but close. And I just, for a second, thought, I just had visions of me getting arrested flashed in front of my mind, mm-hmm. and I thought, I better get out of here while I have the chance.
I would have bailed you, honey. I would have.
Yeah.
But I know exactly what you mean. Yeah.
So, you know, it's just not a good look. But, you know, it's a very emotional time, too, because, you know, we're not spending an hour every other week or a couple hours every other week thinking and talking about this. And we're not spending even an hour a day thinking and talking about this. We are, our life, you know, especially Michelle, myself, Bernie, everybody, you know, I would say to a certain extent, everybody down at the clinic, mm-hmm. everybody that volunteers in any capacity. Mm-hmm. But certainly, you know, for Michelle and Bernie and I being on the kind of in the middle of it all the time, mm-hmm. It's just sort of raw.
You're living it. Living it every day.
And while I think that sometimes that can be, you know, construed as sort of you're too close to it to have a reasonable idea of what's going on, that's not necessarily the case, especially when we're talking about us, you know, Michelle and I, having that lived experience, having gone through that system, coming out on the other side. You know, when people start talking about all of these, really all of these NIMBY ideas, which is, you know, not in my backyard, when people start having all of these thoughts and ideas, these are not new thoughts and ideas to Michelle and I. It's, to some extent, we've, you know, myself, I'll speak for myself, I've thought these things before. I've thought discriminatory things myself before I went through that, even during my, mm-hmm. you know, period of time being homeless, which was mm-hmm. roughly 9 years.
Wow.
I did not see myself as homeless. Mm-hmm. And I did not see myself as one of them or one of us or one of anybody. Mm-hmm. It just sort of was. So, you know, I it's kind of a, it's really complex, but I think that we have a very good view of what's going on. I don't think that we're so close to the situation that we can't reason.
Right.
Or be reasonable.
Right.
But we're at a very different time. This is a very different time than any of us have ever been in.
Mm-hmm.
This is probably once in a lifetime for us, where there's so much, I mean, there's so much loss. There's so many gaps. Everything is really being highlighted right now. And our community itself is just, I mean, we lost our public health. We lost our mental health. We're struggling with our community action. And now we have this city government that just decided it's going to come down like a hammer. And it doesn't even think it's doing that. And
I know.
That's what's hardest, is because they really don't understand what we're saying, and they think we don't understand what they're saying.
I know. And
maybe there is some of that, sure. Maybe there is some of that we aren't hearing some of what they're saying, but we know what they're doing. We know what the effects are going to be. We don't have to guess, and we don't need to have hours-long conversation about this to understand what the impact is going to be.
And it's fine for somebody like Mayor Hedenskog to say that he's never said out loud that he wanted to close St. Tim's down or whatever mm-hmm. he said. But the reality is that we've watched city staff moving against the homeless mm-hmm. for years now. We've watched it. I've watched it. I've watched them rouse them out of the places that they had set up shelters in. Mm-hmm. I've watched it, and I've heard how they have been spoken to by staff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can tell me that your staff's not political.
Right.
If you mean that they're not voting Democrat or Republican by political, but they are most certainly taking a stand on the issue. Mm-hmm. And you can't tell me they're not. And if the city council backs their staff, then city council is taking that same stand. That's just the way it is.
I think that this is, I think it's a really complex issue. Obviously it is. But I mean, when I say that, I mean that I think that there are some hidden intentions, even maybe from each other. I do think that city staff has bias. I've seen that myself with the parks. And to be honest, I didn't even know who Tony Barron was until he was pointed out to me by one of the community members that we serve. And so I just knew that he was someone that showed up in a space where he, you know, shouldn't have been. And hit with him, between him and one of our law enforcement agents and actually Counselor Alcorn himself, you know, they had intended on, well, they had intended on, you know, intimidating one of our clients. And I, there's
And this
no,
was a little old lady, wasn't it? Wasn't,
she,
wasn't
she's not
that
old.
A disabled?
She's actually my age, but she's okay. Very much disabled. And
yeah.
And regardless of what the situation is with her, mm-hmm. that it was inappropriate. Yeah. And yep. So, and they can't tell me what I saw was not what I saw. I was mm-hmm. I was there. I was right yep. there. So I did not know that's who Tony Barron was. And when I described the situation, to a couple of our unhoused community members, they informed me who he was. Mm-hmm. And they knew exactly who he was. They told me mm-hmm. all of the things that he said to them, and mm-hmm. you know, it doesn't really matter. That could be misconstrued as hearsay for sure. So, but what I do know is that he certainly made an impression on them, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. that tells me a lot. That speaks volumes. So, I
and
do
it's
think
a pattern,
that there's bias.
You know, I
it
mean,
is,
it,
yeah.
it would be one thing if it was a once in a while kind of thing, but there's a pattern. There is a pattern. And, mm-hmm. you know, we've seen it with staff, we've seen it with our counselors. I mean, we see the pattern, and we are not blind, and we're not misinformed, and right. we're not stupid.
Yeah, we
can see.
We get what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
We do. Yeah. And I, like, again, I get what they're saying when they're talking about, well, we need to have this in the code, and we need to have this, mm-hmm. You know, laid out so that there's no liability really on the city, mm-hmm. and they are correct in that half of what the action that they took, but for them to just gloss over all of the rest of it is we're not stupid, we do understand, so oh, yeah. but you can't just gloss over that whole other part of the
and
vote.
They are inviting liability. I mean,
right.
I mean, really, if they thought that they were going to kind of skate from liability somehow, taking yeah. actions against a church.
And a conditional use permit for a church, specifically with this intention behind it and with the sort of the feeling that we're getting, and it's not really mm-hmm. a feeling, it's just the actions that are coming from the city council, mm-hmm. you know, this kind of a conditional use permit is really like a sheep and, or what is it, a wolf in sheep's clothing. Mm-hmm. Because at any point, yep. who's to say that they couldn't change that ordinance in the future? And I get it. That requires a vote. That requires a whole other meeting. But gosh,
so
darn it,
what?
we've seen how quickly they're willing to move on these issues.
Exactly.
So all it would take was just another harumph from a few community
yes.
members.
Yes, yes. So, you know, they go on to say that, you know, that nothing changes except feeding in this ordinance. Nothing changes. But it could.
But that's a lot right there.
Yes, it is. But it's also the toe in the door, right?
Right.
It's the toe in the door, which means that anything and everything else may not be up for grabs today, but it's up for grabs tomorrow. Absolutely, yeah. It is.
And the way that the dynamic is on the street, it's not like, this is why it's so hard for people to understand homelessness, is because it's not one thing. It's not, there's no set rule where you can say, if this happens, then this will happen. It's right. So wild. It is unobservable mm-hmm. to a certain extent. But
well, you certainly can't forecast it, right? I mean,
No.
Yeah, and right.
There's a lot of correlation without causation, you know, when we talk about homelessness. And there are a lot of things that contribute to it. There are a lot of things that it contributes to. And so I think it's really too complex sometimes for people to kind of understand it if you haven't lived it and worked it. It's mm-hmm. a really complex issue.
So I wanted to talk a little bit more about what Counselor Alcorn said, because he goes on to say that he hopes we, being, you know, us and the media, understand the issue and are reporting it accurately. So I certainly hope so, too. Mm-hmm. So I thought I would just recap one more time. And if I say anything that's wrong, Diana, just jump in and say, no, that didn't happen. So, once again, the petition signed by 29 neighbors in the First Street, Old County Road area. I think it's Old County Road. It might be Azalea Park Road. I don't know what that road is.
Yeah. There's two side streets that come off of Old County. So, okay. Azalea Park Road and then Fur.
So, a couple of those 29 signatures belong to officers in our own police force, which I find rather appalling. So they asked that petition, they asked the city council to get rid of the homeless that were congregating at St. Tim's. I mean, that right. was basically the message. They wanted all services to the unsheltered to be closed down. This attempt by staff and council to, quote, find balance doesn't actually do that, like, no. at all. And in the process, the city of Brookings has changed their municipal code to limit feeding the hungry by any one church to only 2 days a week, which, in my opinion, infringes on the freedom of each church to practice their religion as they've been instructed to in their New Testament, mm-hmm. or whatever book they go by. The entire weight and financial resources of the Episcopal Church in Oregon, and most likely the entire country, are lined up, ready to take this issue to court. The city will lose in this attack on the First Amendment rights of its community churches, which will cost us taxpayers money in damages and attorney fees that the city will be liable for. And our insurance rates will go up again.
Mm-hmm. Again, yes.
Again. All this because the city feels no obligation to care for its own and wants our unsheltered and vulnerable community members to just go someplace else. Now, I think I got it all, but if I left something out, I hope Counselor Alcorn will let me know.
I'm sure he will. Yeah.
Did I get anything wrong? Did I misspeak? Do I have anything wrong?
That okay. sounds correct. And going back a little bit also mm-hmm. earlier. I think again this is a really complex issue, and it's not like taking away you couldn't say like, look, if you took away a day, somebody would die. There's no way to say that. Mm-mm. But what I will say is that in my experience, sometimes when you're living on the street, you're at the end of your rope more often than most of us here in housing. Mm-hmm. And sometimes your mental health break comes down to one meal that you thought was going to be there. And it's so hard to come up with this strange theory that might come up, and because there's always a way to argue that, but there's no way to argue the fact that somebody standing out in the rain, in the cold, homeless, wanting a meal, is having a mental health. Like, there's no way to argue the fact that that person could be going through some very serious, difficult times. And I can tell you, like, myself, I can clearly remember times where I was, well, I mean, I can clearly remember times where I was just literally at the end of my rope. And there was one time in particular where, you know, I almost gave up my kids here in Brookings. It was the day before we left to go back to Jackson County and get into treatment and get housing, because it was either stay here and give up my kids or leave everything we know and go there and hopefully get housing. And we did. We got it right away. But, you know, there were times where we would hardly sleep at night because one of us would have to kind of stay awake a little bit. We were usually living in our van or sleeping on someone's couch, but one of us would have to kind of stay awake through some of the night to keep an eye on the kids or make sure everything was safe. And so I can remember times going to the park with, you know, my blanket, and I would pretend that I was like reading a book, and I would have a book open, you know, on my blanket and pillow, and I would wear my nicer clothes, and I would just sort of pretend that I fell asleep reading a book and nobody would bother me.
Right.
Because if, you know, the moment Matt did that, now Matt looked a lot different than I did at that time. Like, he didn't have any clothes really. And so he only had, you know, one pair of pants and one pair of shoes and whatnot. So when he went to the park to lay down, I remember one day, it was late at night, but it was kind of earlier in the morning, I guess. And so one day after he had slept in the park that night, he told me that someone had came after him with a knife. And we don't believe that that was someone who was homeless. And, you know, there were other times where he would get woken up by the police and moved on out of there. I never did, though. But again, I mean, I made
But we
it look
know that that's happened
different.
In Azalea Park. We know that
happens
that's
all the time.
All the time.
And I say all this and relate it back to the feeding ministry, because there really were times where I was going to lose it. And I also remember a time in Ashland where I had all four of these kids and they're all hungry. And well, one of them I was breastfeeding and, you know, we're hungry and we had just heard about Uncle Food's Diner. And so we went over there, and actually one of the days we were there, somebody did, somebody from the NPR, is that right? JPR.
NPR.
Or no, I think it was JPR.
Okay.
So
in public radio.
Yes. Yeah. Cause that is in Ashland.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. So they came to the Piecemeal, which is what it was called, or Uncle Food's Diner is what it was called. And so they came there and did a story on us. And I remember that they got this really cute picture of Ada in the story. But we went to that meal, and I remember that day, not the day that they did the story, but the first day that we went there, I remember that day and really, really thinking that that was another time where I almost thought I should probably just give the kids up. Like, I can't feed them. I don't have anything good for them, not just food, but anything. I have no good in me to give them. And it really did make all the difference, us going there, seeing people. You know, everybody was helping with dishes, everybody was helping with the kids. And it was just a lot different.
And I don't think that we ever have any idea what the impact of one kind gesture.
No.
Is. Yeah. And it can be huge. It can literally save somebody's life. So to deny, to restrict feeding people who are hungry is when you could be saving their lives by doing that it's appalling.
And as a city, to put undue burden on a charitable organization that is coming forward and saying, you know, nobody in that kitchen is getting paid. I don't work in that kitchen, obviously, but they I do eat in there. I do get you know, some of my meals from there, especially throughout the week when I haven't eaten a good breakfast. And so you know, there's nobody down there that's getting paid for this, and it's so many. It's a collaboration of so many different people and volunteers, and so to be putting an undue burden on this charitable organization that it, whether it's a church or not. That's providing meals. It's unconscionable because it's not the same as putting undue burden on the individual, but it really hardens, you know, people, and it just sucks. It sucks for all of us to have to go through all this.
And to maintain that somehow these community members who, you know, I think 40% of them in your point. Count like 40% of them were born and raised in Brookings.
Yeah,
they were members. They are members of our community, and to just throw your hands up and say, ah, you know, they're in bad shape, and so we have no responsibility for them, is like, what? Yeah. They paid taxes to you, buddy.
Yeah, so there's a really great study that was, there's a lot of great studies done by HUD, but there was a really great study that they put out recently that talks about, I mean, this is an ongoing conversation, this is not new information, but that really talks about, like, that people are usually homeless in the communities where they were originally housed in. So most people are homeless in the communities where they previously had housing. Which is... I mean, that it's kind of a no-brainer, I guess, in a sense that if you lose your housing, you may not have enough funding to go find another area.
Right. And you're familiar with it.
But, you know. And so, yeah. And so in a way, it's kind of like, well, duh. But really think about that for a second.
Yeah.
Think about that. There's almost 100% of the people in this community that are homeless had a house here before. So what happened? What are we missing? This is not a conversation about who's ours, who's theirs.
No.
This is really a conversation about what is missing in our community that people can sink so quickly to the bottom. And in my opinion, there are so many steps in between homelessness and stable housing that you could name any of those and we don't have it. We don't have transitional housing, you know, that 18 to 24 months. Mm-hmm. It took me 11 months in treatment just to feel like I was at a place where I could be on my own and not fall back into my addiction. 11 months is a long time in treatment housing for a whole family. And so that transition period is critical. I mean, it's just, I can't even describe it. It's like, well, I mean,
training wheels. You don't succeed without it.
Yeah, I mean, training wheels is such a weird kind of term to use, but it's sort of like that in the sense that we had to have that. And a lot of people do need that period of time. So that transitional housing, shelter, for one, when people... Yep. are experiencing domestic violence. And I don't mean just the domestic violence shelter that we are missing greatly right now.
Obviously,
But just in general, having a shelter, because the purpose of a shelter is to really catch people. It really is the basic safety net. It's to catch people so that you have a minute before they disappear.
Yes.
Because once they disappear, the cycle of homelessness just increases, and we see these high rates of chronically homeless people in areas where there's no shelter. And that's what we have here.
And of course, affordable housing, which, you know, was the other item on the agenda. Well, was with the second of the three items on the agenda that they blew.
That's right.
They totally blew it, right? By taking out the provision for accessory dwelling units that they have to be used for affordable housing, you just opened up ADUs for any price range.
And I will say that Schreiber did correct me, although he didn't call me out. It was very kind of him, but he could have. he did call me out on that because apparently in the Brookings Municipal Code, which I actually do remember reading at some point now, that I didn't remember exactly what it had said, but it does state that ADUs are not to be used for short-term rental, mm-hmm. Or are not allowed to be used for short-term mm-hmm. rental. And what I had meant, of course, if Ed's listening, what I had meant by that, and yes, I did think that they could be turned into short-term rental, but mm-hmm. also people will be using them as short-term rental. So yeah,
exactly.
I mean, we're not
what's
kidding ourselves when
and
we
what
think
is actually
right.
happening.
Like,
are
I don't
two
allow
things.
My kids to have candy late at night.
Yeah, right.
But I can, but. You know, occasionally, occasionally, like days after Halloween, they find it. So,
And we know that. You know, and if a homeowner can rent out that ADU for top market value, then the reality is that we have not addressed affordable housing at all. And that is one of the huge contributors to being unhoused. So, again, they got it wrong, right? I mean, the second item, they got it totally wrong.
Well, it's not even like, I mean, my pay grade's not enough to make that decision, but
I'm going to say my pay grade is enough, but you know.
All of your bonuses.
Because I get zero,
Yeah, you get a raise, 3% raise.
Yeah, every day.
So, I mean, I don't know enough to say that, well, it was wrong for them to do that, but it doesn't, what does it do? I mean, we're talking
how
about laissez-faire approach.
Yep.
What does that do?
Exactly. Exactly.
And I don't see anything good coming from that.
No.
But.
No. And I remember kind of one final thing that that Ed Schreiber said, which it had me shaking my head.
Was this at the end?
It was at the very end. Yes.
Okay. I missed the whole end.
Okay. So he said that serving lunches from the churches was not the only option. That if a church wanted to feed its hungry, it could give them, it could cook food at another church, or it could.
Why
cook
on earth
food,
would we do that?
I know. Or it could cook food at a restaurant that was closed for lunch for that day.
Candace, can I come to your house every other day and cook my dinner there? Bring it back here?
Seriously. And like, who's going to, whatever. Or could give the people vouchers to go to a restaurant. Okay, now I want to ask you this question all seriousness. If you're sitting in the Black Trumpet and one of those clients comes in and he or she is dirty and has got tattered, muddy clothing on and is disabled and is probably muttering under their breath and they hand you a voucher to eat there, are you going to seat them?
Well, I think the issue, I'm really glad I didn't hear any of that, but I guess
I know you would have gone right through the roof.
Well, because what he's essentially asking is he's asking us to place people who are extremely vulnerable to social circumstances in hostile environments that have not been prepared for them. And that's not something we ever do as advocates.
No.
We always try to prepare the way for people. And if that means going to the businesses and talking to them, sure, that could very well be an option at some point. But I'm not really sure where or how we would come up with that
the
money.
The Catalyst, Zola's. I'm trying to think of a restaurant in town that would open their doors and open their arms and whose clientele would open their arms to people that they are nervous being around. And those people are nervous being around them. I mean, it's like,
well, because the council's sending, sending this message.
Yes.
Yeah, they're sending this message that, like, you know, here, restaurant owners and patrons, like, they're not safe enough in these neighborhoods. Please take them in there, which is not true. These are people that are, I mean, yes, of course there are issues sometimes. Of course there are.
Of course. If you lived outside, there'd be issues with you too. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I've personally had my own mental health breaks because of living outdoors and because of living doubled up and in mm-hmm. just of really, course. Really high stress environments.
Of course.
Again, you know, like drawing from my own experiences, I remember one time standing in the rain in Ashland and just like, I was so ready to just die. I was just ready. I was like waiting to die, but mm-hmm. I was just secretly kind of wishing to be saved at the same time.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And these are very hurting people and very vulnerable people. And I worry more for their safety yes. than I do for the rest of our community, because these are people that experience hardship and physical health deterioration on a daily basis. These are not people that are in, you know, they're not out there hitting punching bags, training up to Mm-mm. take down neighborhood Mm-mm. old ladies. These are people who are very sick.
It's so sad, and it's so clear from those kinds of comments that are clearly from a perspective of having it all, right? That you don't understand who you're talking about. You don't understand mm-hmm. what you're saying.
That's not who we're serving. Yeah.
No, exactly. So it looks like we're about out of time again. Unbelievable. Mm-hmm. I could have gone on for much longer. You know, it was.
Yeah.
It was a mess. Yeah. It was a mess.
We didn't even really talk about KCIW.
Well, I got a couple of sentences here.
Yeah.
And so I'm hoping that our city council will listen to this podcast, because I think it's they who don't understand the issue. I don't blame them for not enjoying their time in the spotlight. But seriously, you're on the wrong side of history on this one, guys. You've got the wrong mm-hmm. end of the stick. Like in all three cases, you've got the wrong end of the stick. And by the way, I don't think it's any accident that you denied KCIW a 3-month extension to have us relocate our antenna off of your tower mm-hmm. and onto ours once we got FCC approval, which is what we're waiting for. Everything else is in place. We just need the FCC approval. So I don't think that was any accident. I don't think it was an accident that you didn't even discuss it.
Yeah.
That you just simply voted, and including Michelle Morosky, who clearly didn't even know any of the history of it, voted yes right. to deny it. So, you know, in my opinion, it's retaliatory and frankly, petty. Mm. So really, I don't know what you want from me. You want me to say you're all good guys? I don't know what you want.
It was an all-around disheartening meeting.
It really was. So, you know, we're going to keep on going, you and me, mm-hmm. Diana. Mm-hmm. These will be podcast until we get ourselves back on the air, which hopefully will not be too far in the future. And I'm hoping that we can get Lauren Farmer, our nurse guy, back on, because I'd like to have some update on our COVID status and
mm-hmm. and our vaccines.
And our vaccines. And
that I might be picking up on Friday.
Yay! And we can start yeah. vaccinating kids. And
yes, yeah. my son's birthday is coming up. So
I love that. Which one?
Noah, the youngest.
Noah, yay.
It's his turn.
Yay. All right, so thank you, Diana, and thanks mm-hmm. to our listeners for tuning in. We really appreciate you. We'll see you next week.